Christine from Nashville, Tennessee. This is Keep Asking, the weekly podcast that helps you dive in a bit deeper and wider into the research providing insights into today's church and culture. I'm here today with my colleagues Scott McConnell and Casey Oliver to talk about small church evangelism. Today's study is sponsored by Wheaton's Billy Graham Center for Evangelism and the Caskey Center for Church Excellence at New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary. Hello, guys.
Hello.
How you doing?
Doing great. So before we begin, I thought I would go a completely different direction.
From our normal, very specific,
random,
right?
Yes. No. And ask about what was something about your college church? Because we were talking about colleges here and churches. So the church you attended when you were in college, how did it have an impact on your spiritual growth? Anything significant? Anything? It doesn't have to be a whole big summary, but what was it about that church experience that was impactful?
Does it have to be my Sunday morning church? Can I talk about InterVarsity?
Sure, but I want you to lean into the microphone
Fair
more.
Enough. Okay.
Okay.
So, I would say that for me, one of the biggest influencers for me during college was my InterVarsity experience. I made some of my closest friends there, and I think it really helped me to take a greater level of ownership in my faith, to have people that I was like, oh, this is great to have a close community of like-minded believers who were passionate about worship and about being in the Word, and you know, some of those people that I lived with for portions of, you know, so just having that close community was a huge encouragement to me, for sure.
The church I attended during college was 10th Presbyterian Church in Philadelphia, and they had a fantastic pastor at the time, James Montgomery Boyce. So I was sitting under some really excellent teaching, and so, you know, definitely was fed every week and enjoyed that, and loved the detail in which he dissected passages. My entire 4 years in college, we were in the Book of Romans.
Oh my goodness!
I'm not sure how many years it ultimately took him to preach through it, but. So, you know, just knowing that you can get that much out of the Word and to be, just to appreciate that was definitely something I experienced on a weekly basis.
For me, my college church was really pretty impactful because it was a church plant. I didn't grow up in church, but I'd been a believer about a year before I headed off to college. And so to jump into a church plant, there are things, that at that time would have seemed really odd to a lot of other people. But for me, meeting in a bonanza for Sunday morning worship was not that big of a deal, you know? And so I think there's things about how a church plant went about starting up and doing its thing that really kind of set the stage for me to be really open to all that church plants do and how they've developed. And it's been really kind of fun. Besides the personal spiritual impact, it's been a fun journey to see church planting, at least from that window to now, and how things have changed and how some things are the same.
I kind of had a similar experience too, where I just feel like, not that this can't happen with regular churches as well, but just how organic it was it felt normal that we were having, you know, Bible study in our townhouse, you know, because there's like, oh, there's five of us here who are all, you know, in that same place. Or, and just, I think it was an encouragement for me, but also for a lot of other people, including, the person at Susquehanna's InterVarsity now, Ryan Rickrode, is a close friend of mine. And he was a member, you know, he was in college at the same time going to Ivy, and now he's leading that Ivy as well. So it's cool to sort of see how, and for several of us, that impacted us.
Well, I thought that would be a fun question, just as a nod to Wheaton College and New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary, the sponsors for this study, doing a lot to, you know, wanting to help the church as a whole, but also impacting student lives as they go out and minister. So, Scott, set the stage for this project and what it was hoping to accomplish.
Yeah, as you know, both of these groups, the Billy Graham Center for Evangelism at Wheaton and the Caskey Center for Church Excellence in New Orleans, are both attentive to things that can help the church, and particularly in this case, evangelism. The desire was to focus on smaller churches, and you have to draw the line somewhere in defining what are we going to call smaller. And in this case, it was worship attendance of 250 or less. And you know, for many who are listening, they'd say, "Wow, that still includes some pretty good sized churches." But at the same time, it does definitely get out of there. You know, the mega churches and large churches that do have a lot of attendees, and oftentimes can catch all the attention in the magazine articles, mm-hmm. and the illustrations that we see day to day. And let's kind of dig into where most churches are, which is in this size group, and to specifically learn from these pastors what they're doing related to evangelism, and what actually might lead to you know, more people coming to Christ.
Any particular reasons why the data from those larger churches, how that can... What are the concerns about keeping those larger churches in, even up to 1,000? How that is not as helpful in setting the limit right at 250?
You know, just that question that was posed at the very beginning of this is, you know, the desire to learn from about smaller churches and to speak to them, and you know, smaller can be defined by an attendance number, but it also can be defined by church staff and things like that. And at a church of 250 or less, you're typically not going to have more than two staff members, and one of them may be just an assistant helping get things done. And many of those will be bivocational or part-time pastors in those churches. And so the experience changes pretty dramatically as you move up from there.
In telling the story of churches in this size with, you know, limited resources, maybe limited, you know, at least full-time staff, is there some hopeful information that you picked up from the study?
Well, definitely. You know, just on average, these churches, you know, they're seeing, you know, 12 new people make new commitments to Christ each year. The pastors themselves, most of them are reporting, now granted, some of them may be over-reporting, but, you know, they're reporting that they're modeling evangelism in their church. And so, you know, we see that three out of four are saying that they're attempting each week to try to share their faith. And so, you know, if the pastor's out there modeling this kind of behavior, to me, that's a very healthy sign.
All right. Casey, what are some of the differences in how churches are approaching evangelism?
Well, I think even specifically some of the differences that seem to speak out that, oh, this matters a lot. One point of interest for our study was retained new commitments per 100 attendees, which is, you know, that's one measure among many that you could have for, I guess, evangelism effectiveness, but that's one that we looked extensively at. And so we kind of broke it down in terms of saying the top 20%, you know, so churches that are doing really well at that. So that's which turned out to be 11.7 or more new retained new commitments per 100 attendees.
Break that down. When you say that as a measure or a point, what does that mean? Either one of you can jump in.
Because we do have like three things combined there, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think obviously just that they're... If you were going to ask, well, how do we know if a church is being successful in evangelism?
Okay.
That's a pretty broad question, that there are a lot of different ways that you could try to get at that. And this is just one measure of that. This is one way we can say, hey, this is at least something that we're seeing that's a positive outcome. We're not necessarily saying that means that you're doing all the right things or not doing all the right things, but this is a positive outcome, is having retained new commitments. Well, and you'd expect it to be, the bigger the church is, that you'd, you know.
So it counts the number of new commitments, and since even in this range from, you know, from 1 to 250 in church attendance, that's a pretty wide range. A church of 250 hopefully can reach more people than a church of 10. And so we divide that number by the number of attendees. And the third little dimension we throw in there is, let's not just count number of new commitments, but we ask a follow-up question and ask how many of them have actually been retained. They're still in your church. And so by kind of putting those three elements together, how many have you reached, have come to Christ this last year, made a commitment to Christ? They've stayed in your church, and then we just divided that by the size of your church. And so it's the short way of saying it is how many people are you reaching and keeping?
Okay. All right. Excellent. Okay. Keep going.
Okay. So we looked at, you had asked me previously about differences we're seeing. And so if I were going to look at among those that are doing really well by that measure, 11.7 or more retained new commitments per 100 attendees versus the ones who are doing average or below, so the bottom 50% by that measure of less than 5.6 retained new commitments per 100 attendees. If I were going to compare those two groups, we see them different in several different ways. One of them is their interactions with the unchurched, which portions of this are probably more controllable than others, but more evangelistically effective churches by the measure we just talked about are more likely to be comprised of previously unchurched attendees. So 47% of evangelistically effective churches have a high percentage of unchurched attendees, 30% or more unchurched, compared to 27% of less effective churches, so 47 versus 27. Additionally, those pastors are more often hearing feedback that that they are strong at communicating with unchurched people in their worship services. So that's definitely one dimension that we noticed popping out was that interaction with the unchurched. I've got three of these. Sorry, I'm going to talk for a little bit.
Well,
okay,
so you want me to in what you've shared so far, what's the nugget like that you would say this separates out effective from less effective or?
Well, and especially when you get back to thinking about that measure itself, retained new commitments. So if it's people who have never really been going to church before, one, you're reaching initially somebody who hasn't been going to church. That means probably more likely to have new commitments if you're reaching people like that. But then also that you can incorporate them into the life of your church. I think that the fact that you're good at speaking to those people in your worship services and actually, you know, maybe it's communication in a way that isn't just using churchy words that they're not used to and not explaining what those mean. You know, providing some context to like here's what we're doing and why we're doing it. You know, that seems like that communication with the unchurched just seems to matter a lot.
So that it sounds like there's a lot to learn from those that are effective. So communication, any other behaviors that you looked at?
Yeah. So, and again, this might matter. It's you know, when we said, okay, let's go down to 250 or less, this might matter, especially for really small churches, but we're seeing that a personal commitment to evangelism from the pastor makes a huge difference. So, you know, everything from 2/3 of pastors in effective churches say that they ask a person to commit to Christ after a personal presentation of the gospel once a week or more, and that's 37% of pastors in churches that are less effective evangelistically.
What was that first of what percentage?
66 versus 37.
Okay.
So yeah, there are big gaps here. Another one is 57% are blocking out time in their calendar to share their faith with non-Christians once a week or more, compared to just 31%. And less effective churches. So you just see in several different measures, and I'm not even naming all of them here, that the evangelism commitment or follow through of a pastor individually, whether some of those new commitments might be as a result of that person's personal evangelism, but also that maybe that idea or that priority is also being communicated and followed out by the church as a whole.
All right. Scott, what do you think churches that fall within that range, that size, what's the simplest thing that they could take away from this?
You know, a number of the questions we asked were really focused on the pastor, and there really are some opportunities for a pastor to be leading a church. But, you know, keeping in mind that evangelism is not just the pastor's job.
Right.
It's something, you know, that we've all been tasked with. And so if the pastor's out there modeling it, the pastor is making sure that worship service is a place that, they're going out of their way to make sure things are explained in a way that a non-believer would have the possibility of understanding. Mm-hmm. They're kind of laying that foundation. As they're doing other things to involve the congregation, encouraging the congregation to be praying for lost people by name, non-Christians that you know, that's you know, there are tangible steps like that to start to involve people in that, so that there's a shared ownership, but also communicating that the pastor themselves knows that this is important, and they're going to take time to do it as well.
What else? Anything else stand out?
I guess just sort of one final thing being, you know, as we talk about, oh, this is a commitment by the church as a whole. One of those measures we had for that was saying, asking in an agree-disagree fashion, the pastor saying that they consistently hear reports of members engaging in evangelistic conversations. And that was another big one where we saw a huge gap between those that were being more effective. 53% of pastors in those effective churches are strongly agreeing that they're hearing reports of members engaging in evangelistic conversations with non-believers. That's just 30% in less effective churches. So yes, it absolutely, like, you know, like we've been saying, it matters a lot that the pastor is engaging in these activities. But another thing that matters a lot is then, and maybe is somewhat, you know, in combination with that, that helps to lead the congregation as a whole to be engaging in those evangelistic conversations. So I mean, that's not surprising, I guess, that churches that are engaging in evangelistic conversations are seeing more new commitments. But
it's a good reminder, because sometimes, you know.
And we can look at a lot of different methods, and the reality is they may not work in every type of church or every size church. But if one of the goals or the interim goals is to try to get us engaging in those conversations with the relationships that we have, that's a great metric. Even though it's not as exact as something, it's not something we could post on the wall every week, but it is something we can be encouraging. And when you're asking, you know, that also is communicating that we're hoping that's something that we're going to be doing.
Well, guys, that was great stuff. Thank you. And thanks, everyone, for listening. If you have any questions, please tweet to us at SMCon, at StatsGuyCasey, and at Lizette Beard, or at Lifeway Research. I do also want to thank once again the sponsors of this study, the Billy Graham Center for Evangelism at Wheaton and the Kasky Center for Church Excellence at New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary. Join us next time for another edition of Keep Asking. Keep asking, learn more, do better.